host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 280, I believe, and we're going to zig a little bit. We've got a couple of different things than we normally do here on the interview portion of the podcast. We are going to talk a little NBA draft here. We are recording this on June 6th, and thank you to all the veterans. Obviously, the 81st anniversary of D-Day and the invasion of Normandy, and so thank you so much for that. But we are also only 19 days away. And by the time folks hear this, you're going to be 13 days away from the NBA draft, one of my favorite days of the year. And I am really excited to have on Rafael Barlow, an Omaha native and draft guru. We are going to talk NBA draft here for about a half hour or so. Truth be told, I heard Rafael on, I believe, what was it, Kevin O'Connor's? Is that where I told you I heard you on?
I think so. So many over the last few weeks. I can't keep up. I just did one with KLC yesterday also. So.
And it's very bizarre that I put on KOC's podcast this morning, Coach, and just to hear the reaction from game one from last night. And there you are again. I'm like, okay, this is serendipitous here that Rafael is supposed to be on this, but Omaha Burke grad, really excited to have him on here. Coach, tell us a little bit, just how'd you get involved in the draft process? You took over for a legend, Chad Ford. How have you kind of worked, how has this become a career for you?
Just kid from Omaha with a dream to cover the draft. I started a website called NBA Draft Junkies back in 2016, and I was living overseas. I was working with a player that was playing in the EuroLeague, so I spent the season over there. I lived in Istanbul, Turkey, so I spent the season there, and while I was over there, I had a bunch of free time, and I wanted to cover the draft, so I just decided to start a website and started following international players. And that's kind of how I made a name for myself. I was a little early to the party as far as Americans covering European prospects on social media. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of like, I guess, one of my breaks that kind of made people start paying attention to my work. And from there, I just, just put out a lot of content, whether it was articles or podcasts, and it just went from there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, let's dive into it. Like I said, by the time folks hear this, we're going to be about 13 days away from the draft. It seems to be, at least right now, on most people's draft boards, there's a fairly consensus top five, at least at this time, depending on your taste. You, of course, got Cooper Flagg, you got Dylan Harper, you got Ace Bailey, VJ Edgecombe and Trey Johnson, with the two guys from Duke, Con Knipple and Malawach, kind of, six or seven, or some people might slide them as high as three. I know you guys were talking this morning, I heard somewhere that Con Knipple might be sliding up to maybe as high as three with Philadelphia, but is that kind of where everybody is kind of settling in at? Like, if there's no changes, those are pretty much our top seven guys.
I mean, yeah, but you never know.
Yeah,
you never know on draft day. Things can change. There was a few years ago, Patrick Williams skyrocketed up into, I think, the top five. So you never know. But based off the consensus and what people think are going to happen, that's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm. How big of a sigh of relief was there in Dallas when Cooper Flagg, or when I shouldn't say Cooper Flagg, but their ping pong balls fell in such a generous way, 1.8% chance of winning that. Nico Harrison must not have upset the basketball gods too much by trading Luka Doncic.
Unfortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but I was in Chicago when everything happened.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't actually here in Dallas to just kind of see the reaction. So based off of what I saw online, it was just, we were shocked. People were amazed. I mean, like you mentioned, the odds weren't in their favor. But it was just good for the Mavs front office. I know some of those guys in the high leadership roles, and it was just good for them. I think it's kind of like a sigh of relief in a sense, because they made a move that they believe was best for the team. And obviously a lot of people disagree with it, but it was just impacting just the team and the city, impacting like season tickets and financially, and it's just so much stuff that was going along or going just being said. And then with them getting Cooper flagged, it's a situation where the season ticket holders are coming back. You know, it provides a new breath of fresh air, new hope. So you have a new marketing guy that, you know, is trying to get people excited. Like, it's crazy as it may sound, Anthony Davis has like a Hall of Fame career. He's a champion. He's won on so many levels. But he just didn't move the needle for Mavericks fans as far as just like excitement or buzz. Mm-hmm. And that's just because he was traded for Luka Doncic. So I don't think there's a lot of people that could get the fan base excited again or make people really want to spend their hard-earned money to come watch. And Cooper Flagg just kind of was just a perfect scenario. I mean, he's young, he's unknown from the NBA standpoint. And sometimes it's better to be a rookie. You're more popular as a rookie than some veterans.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. But overall, I know that's kind of a long-winded answer. I think the fan base here in Dallas is excited to have Cooper Flagg, and I think the front office is too.
Yeah. What's the ceiling for Cooper? What's the floor?
I don't know. I mean, it's the question that I get often. Mm-hmm. And the best answer I can give is, I don't know. Like, we don't know. Like, he's not a player that has any, like, real easy comparison because he's good at so many different things.
Yep.
So, but he's also not like your jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen some people try to compare him to Jason Tatum. I've seen some compare him to Andre Kirilenko. I think some of the comparisons are a little lazy, but there's just so many things that he does well. I'd say the ceiling for him, I mean, guess best case scenario is he's franchise guy. He's the guy that leads a team to a championship. He's all NBA. He's the Defensive Player of the Year candidate every year. And he's a closer.
Yep.
The floor, and I think he has a high floor. The floor is he's just a really, really good connective piece that drives winning. Maybe he's not like your 1A. Maybe he's not the guy that you know, is the face of the franchise. But I think his floor is he could be a really good like 1B or number 2 option. So ironically, Anthony Davis is one of the comparisons I have for him. Not saying that they play alike, but Anthony Davis,
their role with the squad.
Yeah, like I don't think if Anthony Davis is your best player, if he's your closer, I don't know how good your team is. I think talent-wise, Anthony Davis has all the tools to be 1A, but we saw in New Orleans when he was the guy there. I think they won just one playoff series, but we also saw him win the championship with the Lakers. It was LeBron's team. AD was phenomenal during that 2020 playoffs during the bubble, and they won, but we've also seen, you know, if AD is your main guy, I don't know if he's like a guy that
he's a better Robin than Batman.
Yeah, I think even then he's like a little bit above Robin. So I think he needs to be like a 1B. Mm-hmm. With that being said, so I don't know. I mean, if Cooper has a similar career like that, I think that's phenomenal. I just wonder, like, are people going to be critical of him because the expectations have been set so high for him?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's with a lot of players. You know, the hardest part for a lot of these players these days is they've been poked and analyzed since they were 10 years old, you know, and so whatever Cooper Flagg may do or whatever Dylan Harper may do, there's going to be some knucklehead that's going to be like, well, it should be this though. You know, it should be that. If Cooper Flagg wins 3 MVPs, well, he should win 4. You know, if he wins 3 titles, it should be 4, you know, and just stupid stuff like that, you know? So, I love his competitiveness personally. I you know, he's highly skilled. There's not a lot of chinks in his armor with his skill set, but the thing that I love is, and it just seems simple, but it's an underrated value. The guy plays hard every single time he's out on the floor. And that, to me, is one of the most attractive things about it.
Yeah, the competitive fire, the toughness. Even like if you really, really like, think about it. He started this season at 17 years old.
Correct.
And he had games where he just was the most active player on the floor. He was the toughest guy. You put a small guy on him, he had the mindset of this guy's too small, I'm going to take him to the block. You put a big on him, he's all right, this guy's too slow, I'm going to blow by him. So even just the mindset to be that confident at 17, he was not scared of the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think sometimes you have to really like put it into perspective. Like a lot of times you put a normal 17-year-old on a college floor playing pickleball, he might be a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
Because these guys are older and college basketball is getting older. But Cooper, you know, 17 was like, I'm the best player on the floor. I'm going to show you guys I'm the best player on the floor. Give me the ball and I'm going to exploit these mismatches. So I just even think like his mindset on top of the competitive fire and how hard he plays, all of that blends together is what makes it special.
Mm-hmm. If you are the San Antonio Spurs at 2, who are you taking?
Dylan Harper.
Okay.
I take Dylan Harper. Now, whether I'm going to keep him or not, that's a different subject. But mm-hmm. go best player available, and having the best player available gives you the option to possibly move him if he needs to be moved. Obviously, there's rumors that Giannis Antetokounmpo could want out of Milwaukee. And I think a guy like Dylan Harper gives the Spurs the best chance of making a deal with a guy like Giannis if he becomes available. I don't know about the fit. I mean, they just traded for De'Aaron Fox at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Kind of easy to forget that because he didn't play a lot of games after the trade. Stephon Castle played his best basketball when Fox went down. When he had the ball in his hands, he's not a really good shooter right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of the fit if I were in Harper's camp, but if I'm the Spurs, I'm taking Harper.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Raphael, but, you know, let's get three guys, find which two fit best for us, and we'll use the third guy to fit somewhere else where we need support. And I think that might be the way the Spurs are thinking here.
Yeah, I mean, there's no need to overthink it. You just take the best player available and you just figure things out. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to build a championship team by, of course, through the draft, but sometimes it may not be your own draft. It may not be the player you draft. It may be your draft pick that helps you make a move to get the guy that you need to push over the top.
Absolutely. Is Ace Bailey maybe the most divisive player in the draft? Not, I mean, obviously not with his personality, but just thinking about what his ceiling could be, what his floor could be. He could, you know, I've been fortunate enough to talk to a couple of guys, couple scouts, you know, and they both kind of told me the same thing. This guy could be a franchise player, or he could really, really, you know, at times struggle in the league here. Is that kind of where a lot of people are? And that's why, you know, maybe he might be more gifted than Dylan Harper in some ways, but that's why, but Harper seems to be a little bit more quote unquote reliable as a prospect, a little bit more of a sure thing than Bailey is.
Yeah, I get that comment today. I get it, but I'm somewhat of a very, very maybe over-realistic. At the end of the day, all of these guys, 18 or 19 years old, we have no idea what's going to happen once they get millions of dollars secured in their bank accounts.
Yeah.
And so I think for Bailey, I understand the red flags. I understand the hesitation. But there hasn't been any signs of character issues or anything like that. He mm-hmm. was one of the younger players in college basketball. He's very young. His body still has a ways to go. I think his style of play may be a little bit polarizing because he's so reliant on contested shots. But when he's on, man, he's on.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like 13, 15 from the floor against, I think it was Indiana, I believe. And there was a game against Northwestern where he's like 13 of 20. But he's on. He
torched Nebraska this year at Pinnacle Bank. I think he might have had 30 that game. I mean, he was just unbelievable.
Yeah. So the talent is there. You know, the game is so driven by analytics now, and maybe because his shot selection isn't analytics friendly. And so a lot of the chatter on Twitter that you see is people that are really analytics driven. And so they may not like him that much because he likes the mid-range shot. So I think some of the chatter around him was a little bit unfair to him. Like, but I get it. I mean, he still has a ways to go, but I understand why people are saying, like, if he reaches his full potential, then he could end up being the best player in the draft.
Yep.
But then there's some, I've had a scout tell me, he reminds me of Cam Reddish. Cam Reddish, he's very, very hyped in high school and still ended up being a lottery pick, but he's struggling to stick right now. So, but to answer your question, he's very divisive.
Yep. What do you think are the odds, and both San Antonio and Philadelphia are in a unique situation where in some degree more Philadelphia than maybe San Antonio, but again, with Wembanyama, with big guys, you go back to your Ralph Sampsons, and that's kind of the worst case scenario for anybody who gets somebody that's that tall and the way that their body is, you know, the history of the game has not been kind to extremely tall players, but Wemby, I know he's done all the sports science to try and negate that. But, you know, could we see, what do you think, Rafael, are the odds that we maybe see some movement with those 2 and 3 picks there? Both teams maybe making a little bit more of a win now type of decision. Excuse me. You know, obviously a lot of talk about Giannis and San Antonio, but does Giannis want to go west? Philadelphia, of course, with Embiid and Paul George on big contracts. You know, what's there, you know, so what's kind of your viewpoint from what you've heard and what you've seen about what may happen?
Only thing I've heard is that we don't know. I've heard it's going to be a wild, wild stretch of days between the draft and free agency.
I can't wait. And
usually when you hear that, nothing happens. But, like, I believe it this year. I mean, you look at the trade deadline. The trade deadline was pretty crazy with the number of guys that were moved. And then I think with this, the whole apron thing, and teams are scared of paying the second apron and the big taxes. I think that, along with the parity, you have the Indiana Pacers in the finals. I don't know too many people that predicted the Pacers to go to the finals. And along with two small market teams and the Thunder and the Pacers playing on the biggest stage, I think there's a lot of teams that may feel like, hey, we're a mover's call away. Or if you're a small market team, you probably feel like we have a chance. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be very active. San Antonio, I don't know why they would want to be in, like, crazy win-now mode. I get it. You want to win, but you've seen the Thunder be patient.
Yeah.
Develop their guys. They didn't really bring in any, I mean, other than Caruso and bringing in Hartenstein, but they didn't really, like.
But they waited until they knew which guys they needed for that exact role, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they developed their guys. When the Spurs have had a lot of draft picks, they got their cornerstone. Mm-hmm. So you just build around your cornerstone. Then they got Castle, who won Rookie of the Year. So they've had two. Is it back-to-back Rookie of the Year? So I guess so. I never thought of it like that. So they have the pieces. So I don't think they need to rush the process. Philly's different. I don't know what direction Philly should go in. I mean, Embiid is on borrowed time. He's not playing back-to-backs the rest of his career, I don't believe. And Paul George is on the wrong side of 35.
Yep.
They signed both of those guys to massive deals last year, George in free agency and Embiid in an extension. So there has to be a sense of urgency there. So maybe they trade 3 to try to win, but then their backcourt is still young with Maxie
and McCain.
And Jared McCain, when he's healthy. So I don't know. I mean, they're in a really difficult spot. But I imagine that they are going to try to maximize what they can out of George and Embiid.
Yeah. Coaches have really enjoyed the opening tip newsletter that has been coming out from a pen and a napkin here for almost a year now. Every 2 weeks, on the 1st and the 15th of every month, you're going to get a newsletter with an article, a podcast, an extra, a bonus podcast. You're going to get some coaching videos on there. You're going to get some book recommendations, a lot of different things that are coming out here with the Opening Tip newsletter. It's really driven towards a little bit more of a personal written form of what we do here at A Pen and a Napkin, which of course is to help coaches get better, to hone their craft. And so I use a lot of my own personal experiences. We use other people's personal experiences. We try to go into the lab with coaches. We try to get into the nuts and bolts, a little bit more of a visual compilation of things that we do here at A Pen and a Napkin. So if you haven't subscribed to the Opening Tip newsletter, you need to do so now. Go to Substack.com, find the Opening Tip newsletter and subscribe to it. Or if you find it on Twitter here, go to it, check it out, subscribe to it. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you to check out. So check out the Opening Tip newsletter on Substack from A Pen and a Napkin. Yep. I really like Vijay Edgecombe going to Charlotte at 4. I really like his game, strong slasher, can D up, you know, just athletic. I think he's got a chance to be a really, really good pro. What's your read on him, Coach?
Divided on that, just mm-hmm. because the way he looked representing the Bahamas last summer was phenomenal. There were times where he looked like he was the best player on the floor. And that team had NBA players and Eric Gordon and Buddy Hield and DeAndre. But then at Baylor, it was a mixed bag. Like, yes, he's athletic, but he was not efficient at the rim. Like 50% on layup. Shooting, he's doing 34%, but he was not good at the beginning of the year when they play ranked opponents. So I know people love him. The character I hear is just like, I mean, just really high character guy. I hear some teams are valuing that. I don't know if he's such a sure thing as people think. Like, what is the one skill set that he brings to the table right now? Of course, there's time to develop. But what is that one skill set that he can hang his hat on?
Yeah.
Is it the shooting? I don't know. Is it the athleticism and getting to the rim? He wasn't a great finisher at the rim. He's a good connective passer. Defensively, he was good, but he's, 6'4"?
Yeah.
6'5"? So
yeah.
I have some concerns. I'm not, like, all in on a lot of people about Vijay Edgecombe. And I think fit for him is going to be important.
Yep.
So Charlotte would probably be an ideal situation because as the way the roster is constructed now, it's LaMelo Ball, it's Brandon Miller. Those are the two guys that he can just kind of slide right in and be a connective piece. But if he goes somewhere like maybe Utah, where they're looking for their guy next to Markkanen, and maybe another big time scorer, I don't know if that's the best situation.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. It's all about fit. You know, you got to find that right place. Because I really want to respect your time, Raphael. I know you're really, really busy. Who, anybody outside of that top 5 to 7 that we mentioned, who's a guy that if you're drafting after, let's say, 7, who's a guy that you're like, people are sleeping on this player, I really, really like this dude?
It's the player I've been talking about for, I guess, a month now, to the point where I've been criticized on social media as being an industry plant. It's Stanford's Maxime Raynaud. And I just take the picture. What if I told you there was a guy that began his career as a walk-on or partial scholarship guy, but and you sound like a basketball historian, just mentioning like Ralph Sampson and all that. But this guy had a historic year in the ACC, which is a conference that has been,
it's been all right,
loaded with, yeah, NBA talent and former players. He was just points away from being the first player to lead the ACC in scoring and rebounding. He finished second in scoring, first in rebounding. And he set, or he finished second all time in three-pointers made in NCAA history in the season by a seven-footer. So again, second in ACC in scoring, first in rebounding, seven-footer, legit seven-footer, and made the second most threes in NCAA history in the season. On top of that, he's a good athlete and a good passer. And people hadn't been talking about him. And I was writing about Maxime Reynaud all year, saying he's the first rounder, he's the first rounder. He has one good game at the NBA Combine, and now you're starting to see he's trending in the right direction. But for me, he did it all year.
Yeah.
He did it all year. So, and just the fact that, and I've mentioned this before on a previous podcast, he's like 18 months older than Derrick Queen. I know Maxime was born in 2003. Derrick Queen was born in 2004.
Uh-huh.
One's a freshman, one's a senior. So the age gap is not that wide, but Queen is considered more of an upside guy.
Yeah.
Because he just finished his freshman year, while Reynaud isn't, because he's a
senior.
The senior, yeah. But Reynaud didn't even have a scholarship. And every year he's gotten better and better and better. And so he's a guy that I'm a lot higher on than the consensus, and I would use the lottery pick on him. And he didn't start playing basketball till late.
Yep.
He was a slugger.
Yeah, I love guys like that. You know, the Malawach kid, you know, yeah, he looks a little awkward, I guess you would say, at times, but he just started playing when he's like 15 or 16. You know, and he's so, when you, and I hate the word upside, because I want to see it, but I think there are exceptions to that rule. And I think that's a couple of guys that you're talking about there where that, you know, if they've been playing since they're 10 or 8 or 6 and you're still waiting on them to develop, at some point they got to start developing. But if you're talking about special circumstances like the two guys we're talking about here, then that's a legitimate case of, what's the potential here? What could we really do with this person? And so I agree with you there, Coach.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it everything is situational, but sometimes I like these guys that weren't told that they were great when they were 9 or 10. These guys that still have a somewhat of a chip on their shoulder, guys who you don't think are going to get comfortable once they make it. They've had to fight. Like Reynaud wasn't a starter his freshman year. He had to like earn his way.
Yep.
So I think sometimes a guy like that may handle not playing early in the NBA a lot better than the guy that has been the best player on the team from middle school, high school, college, and then he goes into a situation where now he's like, you know, fifth best player.
Yep.
Sometimes guys really have a difficult time adjusting to things not being ran for them to trying to fit in. So mm-hmm. to me, those guys that have had to like claw their way or late bloomers, I think the transition is a lot easier for them. And they seem to really find ways to do what it takes to get on the floor.
Yep. Let's wrap up here, Rafael. Let's talk about four local guys here. I'm going to bring you back to your Nebraska roots here. All right, man. let's talk Ryan Kalkbrenner, Bryce Williams, Hunter Salas, and Chucky Hepburn here. You know, four guys with local ties in one way, shape, or form. Let's start with Kalkbrenner here. Looks like he's pretty solid early to mid second round from the mocks that I've seen. What's your take?
I mean, you know what you're getting from him. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. Efficient finishing around the rim. He's a massive interior presence. Is he four-time Big East Defensive Player of the Year? Is it three times?
He was four because he tied Ewing for the record.
Yeah, and it's so weird to me that was a four-time Defensive Player of the Year. When you mention, you know, you question people, why isn't he a first-round pick? And say, oh, I don't know if he can defend. I understand defending on the college level and defending in the NBA is a little bit different. A four-time Defensive Player of the Year, and he's not going to miss around the rim, I think he could end up being one of these guys that gets passed up because there's a younger, more athletic prospect that is sexier, but he ends up having a better career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bryce Williams led the Big Ten in scoring, I believe. 6'6", 6'7", plays well off the ball screen action. Played a lot of point guard for Nebraska the last couple of years. Where's Bryce at?
Very underrated guy. Just hasn't had a lot of buzz. This hasn't been talked about much in this draft cycle, despite putting up numbers and, Big Ten's a pretty tough conference. He's a guy that I think his draft range could be anywhere from late 30s to undrafted. All the players that decided to go back to school, the underclassmen that went to face NIL money, I think that definitely helps a player like him. Mm-hmm. But he can shoot, he can score, and he's a player that I think could definitely stick.
Do you think it because he's a sixth year guy that people, he's probably 24, that people might be holding that against him a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. But I think now, the way NIL has impacted the NBA draft, college basketball, you're going to see a lot more guys like that. Yeah. And I spoke with a team, and they were bringing in guys for what they call the 61st pick, like the guys that aren't going to get drafted, but who's the guy that we think could help us? And they mentioned that two-way players or guys that are older that are ready to contribute have played for them on two-way contracts in the past. So it's important for them to find somebody that they think can come in and contribute if needed. And just the way the game has changed really this year, that there's not going to be a lot of upside swing freshmen that just didn't want to play college basketball anymore available outside of the first round. So yeah, you're going to have a lot more guys that are a little bit older. So yeah, I mean, I think his age hurts the buzz, but the production is too good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. How about Omaha native Hunter Salas out of Wake Forest? Declared after his junior year, decided, was borderline first-round draft pick, comes back. Wake didn't quite have the season that they hoped that they would have had this year, but Hunter was still really, really good. So, where's Hunter at?
I'm a little biased. I mean, me being from Omaha and have a good relationship with Hunter's mom, I sat next to her after combine, so I'm a little biased. and I try not to be biased, but I would have taken him as a first rounder last year. I thought the year that he had, averaging 18 points a game, and his athleticism, I just thought that was worth a first round pick. This year he came back, and the numbers were pretty much the same, except the three-point shooting, the efficiency dropped. So if you look at the numbers, it's 3 years below 30% from three. So I think some teams are going to question whether or not his junior year was an outlier year. The 2 years at Gonzaga, where he did play a lot of minutes, I mean, those are on his resume. And then this year, like I said, just the three-point shooting, the numbers weren't efficient. But he's a guy that... very, very good athlete. I think the shooting will be fine down the line. He's a really good mid-range shooter. He's just going to have to be a lot more comfortable extending his range and playing off the catch. Once he gets a rhythm, he's fine. And he's, like I said, a really good mid-range shooter. Mm-hmm. But I think his draft range could be anywhere from 30 to undrafted. You just never know. It's all in the eyes of the beholder. But at the minimum, at the very, very minimum, I think he's the guy that's going to get a two-way contract. Mm-hmm. And the way the NBA is right now, I think after pick 35, you're going to get a two-way contract. The difference is, are you going to hear your name called?
Yeah. Yep. Last one here from Omaha, Hunter's childhood friend, Chucky Hepburn, Wisconsin for 3 years, chose to go to Louisville, a little bit better, or much better fit for him stylistically, with the way that they played there in Northern Kentucky. But where's Chucky at right now?
I think Chucky is a guy that's going to be in that range of what you call the 61st pick, I think, after the draft. And maybe he gets drafted. I hope for his sake he does. I've known his family for a while, too. So I'm hoping he gets the opportunity to hear his name. But if he doesn't, he's going to be a big name for teams looking to bring in guys for summer league and sign some two-way deals. I talked to a NBA scout about him a few months back, and he mentioned that he didn't think he would get drafted. And he didn't know if he were, if Chucky was an NBA player, but he said that he has the makeup, the intangibles, and everything that a player needs to succeed and come from, as he's called it, out the mud to make it. He talked about just the character, being a defender, being unselfish, playing hard, playing tough. And he said he thinks that will make up for the lack of, like, ideal size and ideal athleticism. And maybe he's not the most efficient shooter. But he was just raving about his intangibles, and he thought that he had what it takes to possibly find a way to and maybe it's just an Omaha comparison, but I remember Eric Shiflin was a guy that I went to a lot of his high school games when he was at Bellevue West, and I was a kid, and my dad took me to those games, and Eric wasn't drafted. But Eric went from being like a big-time scorer in high school. I think he was the all-time leading scorer in Class A until Andy Woolridge broke his record when he scored 50 in the state championship game.
Yeah, Strickland held it for about 48 hours.
Yep. What? Was it 48 hours?
Strickland had it. But he got his Bell West got beat before the state tournament, and then Woolridge, they ended up winning it that year, and like you said, Woolridge had 50 in the state final. Yep. So that's how he broke.
Okay, so you're a Nebraska hoops historian too.
Well, I may have written a book about Chucky Hepburn and Hunter Salas and that type of a thing called Kings of Their Court, Raphael. Strickland and Woolridge kind of played into that story as well.
Okay, so I know both guys, and I still communicate with both guys to this day. But with that being said, Strickland was a big-time scorer in high school and, just had to claw his way to the NBA, was undrafted, and I think he played like 10 years. And they're both Bellevue West guys, so maybe it could be a similar situation, and that would be something I would hope for Chucky.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. Raphael, I asked for a half hour. We agreed on a half hour. It's been 35 minutes, so I know you're crazy, crazy busy. Anything else you want to add to the draft? Anything that we may have missed here this afternoon?
No, I have about 10 more minutes if you want to go a little bit longer. Oh, so if you have some more questions.
I've got more questions. I've got way more questions. So let's talk a little bit. You cut your teeth on foreign players. And, the international game is obviously bigger than it ever has been. So who do you have your eye on from outside? We've talked all quote-unquote domestic players here today so far. Who do you have your eye on for 1, 2, 3 difference makers that might be coming in from outside of the country in this draft?
There's a few guys that I like. I like Noah Senge. I think he's a top 10 pick. He's playing for Radio Farm Ulm, and he's French, but he's playing in Germany. I've had the opportunity to watch him play live a few times. I saw him last year in Dubai. He had a game where he had like, I could be wrong, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was like 33 points and like 17 rebounds. He just was the guy that knows how to stuff the stat sheet. Still has a lot to work on in his game. Right now, he's not a really good shooter. You can't say he's like a really good shot creator, but he just impacts the game with his activity, whether it's timely cuts or getting steals and finishing the transition, offensive rebound putbacks, slashed into the rim. He's been really good, especially as a teenager playing in Germany's top league. And he's playing on a playoff team. It's not like they're empty stats on a team that isn't winning. He had a good game against the Portland Trail Blazers in the preseason. And I understand that Portland wasn't at full strength and it was a preseason game, but it was 17 at the time. So he's really intriguing. Hugo Gonzalez is a player that I've watched. I've been studying him for years. He's been like the top player in the 2006 generation in Europe for quite a while, but he just hasn't had the same opportunity to play because he's playing for Real Madrid and he's on a team that is looking to, they were trying to compete for the EuroLeague. They didn't make it to the Final Four, but they're trying to win their Spanish league. And it's tough for younger guys to get minutes in Europe because it's win now. There's so much pressure to win.
Yeah.
So coaches usually lean towards older players. And so I think part of that has been good for college basketball. That's why now most of the top international players are going to play college basketball because they have an opportunity to play against players their age. Before, let you play with your peers. Then once you got about 18, you had to jump to the big club. Mm-hmm. And then fight for minutes. So Hugo Gonzalez is a player that I find pretty intriguing. There's Nolan Traore from France, who I thought was a top five pick coming into the season. Had a rough start to his year playing in France. He's playing the most difficult position. He's a point guard. Really struggled for a while, but he's turned it up, and he's been better since the start of the 2025. Calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people are talking about him, but he's a player that I'm high on. There's two more guys that I'm higher on than the consensus. One is a piece of grief named Yoko Zabalas. I honestly think that if he played college basketball this year like Yegor Demian did at BYU and Kaspar Zakachonis at Illinois, I think if Zabalas played college basketball, I think we'd be talking about him as a lottery pick. He's 6'8". He's a good athlete. He's a point guard, but he has the size that allows him to play more than just on the ball. He had a good combine. He turned from his at the combine, but now he just has a big decision to make because I think he'd get drafted. I really do think he would get drafted, but the colleges are coming after him right now. There's a little bit more certainty in college and his role and how much he can get paid.
I was just going to say, he'll probably get paid more in college. So,
yeah, depending on his draft range. So he has about a week and some change to decide what he wants to do. And then there's a big Chinese kid who I really like. His Hanson Yang, and he's very skilled. Not going to wow you with athleticism. But I mean, he's got great touch on the basket. He's physical. He's a really good passer. And he's got a little bit of, and I hate saying this, but he's got a little bit of like Jokic in his game to where he's not pushing the ball up the court like Jokic, but just the passes that he makes and feel and the fact that he's not jumping over, you know, a sheet of paper, he's not jumping out the gym, but he just has really good fundamentals around the basket. He's got a little bit of like Kevin McHale shoulder fakes in this game. Really skilled, but really good passer. And so I think that if he gets the opportunity, and if I'm the Brooklyn Nets with all my first round picks, and we have four first round picks, I'm definitely swinging for the fences on Hanson Yang.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide. And grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slicus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. On the backside of our doubleheader this week, we have the newly minted head women's basketball coach at Fort Hays Tech Junior College in Goodland, Kansas. I got that all right, didn't I, Coach? Yeah, see, not bad for 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday after obsessing over a stupid phone game last night till the wee hours of the morning here. Jordan Klein, new head of women's basketball coach, Fort Hays Tech, Goodland, Kansas. Coach, thanks so much for joining us here this week, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely, Marty. Thanks for the opportunity to connect and talk hoops.
You bet. Let's, you know, this is kind of a squished down version of the interview pod on the front half of this. We talked NBA draft, so we kind of zigged a little bit this week, but we still want to get some real good coaches discussion here, formal coaches discussion. You've done some things over the last 3 or 4 years here. It's been quite the sprint for you, my friend. Tell us a little bit about your unconventional coaching journey.
When I graduated high school, I went right into college. I played for 2 years at a junior college and then went to UW-Milwaukee, where I met my wife, and was my first time in a big city. So I got distracted. Mm-hmm. And it was not as focused as I needed to be.
I didn't need a big city to be distracted. I'm just telling you that. So
that's what happened.
Yeah.
So I went into sales. My first sales job was at U.S. Cellular selling phones.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching was not in my mind. I was just on the back end of playing and having a good time. So I sold phones for a little while, learned how to connect pretty quickly with people and listen. I got recruited to go into finance, which I think can be typical for a lot of younger kids, where you start in a Northwestern Mutual when you're doing life insurance and those types of things. So I got recruited to be into finance, was fortunate to get recruited again and work my way up to be a CFO of a media company, or real estate media in Milwaukee and all over. But I did that for 2 years while coaching high school hoops on the side. My wife, we do that part-time. Let sounds bad, but we know that's the truth.
Yeah.
And then I just got the itch again, and I said, I don't have a ton of purpose wearing a suit and tie and working 50 hours a week, managing other people's assets. So I'm going to I'm going to jump in head first into coaching. So I suppose about 2.5 years ago, I started reaching out to college coaches. Dave Slabaugh emailed me back and said he'd be interested in having some part-time help. So I moved my family from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, down to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for about a $3,000 job.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some money saved from finance, so life was good. And I just have had amazing support. So I went to Cornell College for a year, and then through Snow Valley Basketball, I was recruited again to go be on the women's side with Ryan McAdams at Arkansas Fort Smith.
Yep.
So got to go Division II for a year. And it, just because of my age, being married, I'm in my early 30s and having a 3-year-old daughter, I don't have as much wiggle room or time as other coaches that started 12 years before me.
Mm-hmm.
So was on the move to look for a full-time opportunity. I love coaching the women's game as well. That's been really impactful for me, especially having a young daughter. So I'm fortunate to get this opportunity with Fort Hays and become a D1 JUCO head coach.
Yeah. You've put in the work in a short amount of time. You went down to the Final Four this year. Believe me, I was just a little bit jealous to see you and Twig and Karen Self and Mo and everybody hanging out. You know, it's okay. Us working stiffs, you know, we're not jealous in any way, shape, or form, Coach. But you went down to the Final Four, did some things there. And then I'm really curious, you just got back a few weeks ago from the head coach's training center, which I think is a really cool. So kind of take us, let's start with the Final Four first. Now, I've been to the Final Four before, long, long time ago. I won't date myself too badly, but Shamika Holtzgob was playing. So it's been a minute. But you know, going down to the Final Four, you know, what was the Final Four like? And then I'm really curious to find out, you know, what all went into this head coach's training center convention that you went to.
Or ended up being a small Snow Valley reunion.
Uh-huh.
Just to see people at the games. I had my ticket way up in the nosebleeds where I needed an oxygen tank, and ended up finding tickets in the 100 section with Twig. So really fun experience. Good to see people again. I met a handful of new coaches as well. Networking was good. But a lot of the value came from the clinic was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Karen Self did an unbelievable job talking about neurodivergent kids and how to communicate with different types of athletes. So there's a lot of good learning there. And then came home for maybe 2 weeks or so, and then flew back down to Orlando to go to the head coach training center. That one's not recorded, which is a little bit abnormal. Most people want to sell the topics or talks. And so people at that one specifically were really open, and it was really transparent. Mm-hmm. So actual steps to become a head coach, there were over 10 Division I athletic directors there talking on what they want to hear in interviews. It was just really open. So I got to reconnect with some familiar faces, definitely met some new people. Coach Nicole Dixon's assistant, Lewis, from Holy Innocence was there. He's one of the men's agents. So I got to connect with him again from being down in Atlanta recruiting. But just a really good experience. I wanted to mention Hannah Hayden did a great job from Georgia Southern. MJ Baker's the new women's head coach at Emporia State. She's going to be a rock star in the MIAA. And then Stephanie Gailey, it's an absolute legend. She's at Carly Dickinson. Unbelievable amounts of information on culture, things they do for fun, just how you build a program. And not just, I think coaches for the most part can become pretty comfortable at the X's and O's part.
Yeah,
it's everything else that goes into it. So I was really re-energized, had a lot of clarity about how to prepare for an interview, and then building a program from that.
I was gonna ask you, you know, if there was the one or two nuggets, the one or two biggest nuggets that you took from that, preparing for the interview and just building the program from a 360-degree type of point of view, are those kind of the two biggest things you took from it?
Yeah, preparation by far, which I'll talk about as far as my interview process with Fort Hays. But the second one is, so in sales, just having that background, I feel comfortable with the content. So relating it to basketball, the X's and the O's, X's and O's, practice, planning, weight room. I feel good. There's always room to learn, but I'm confident. Where I think you become an expert is when you become an industry expert and you understand what's happening around you in the landscape of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to sit in those rooms with the head coach at Seton Hall, and I'm a Division II assistant, keeping my mouth shut because I don't know what I'm talking about, in the world of rev share and NIL and how they're managing the transfer portal, and to hear transparent information on how programs are changing to be able to budget for these things, it just makes you a lot more comfortable as far as to be an industry expert. If I can say, hey, here's what I see happening in the industry, there's a lot more credibility than just, hey, Goodland, Kansas is amazing. Let me push and promote this and tell you how awesome we are. That's not different than any other coach. So mm-hmm. I think to be able to differentiate yourself is a big deal, especially when you're talking.
Mm-hmm. You're applying for jobs, you're looking for gigs, and come across, you know, Fort Hays Tech. You get the call to come in for the interview. You know, what did you feel like? Where were you really well prepared for the interview? What did you feel like you did, and don't be modest, Jordan, you know, what did you feel like you did really, really well in the interview process?
So I received a phone call from the athletic director, Rory Kling, and I was taking notes the entire time. So I probably had 15 sticky notes full of things that he was talking about in our 1 hour phone call. And it was just supposed to be an introductory call and say, hey, we're interested, let's schedule an interview. So from that, I feel that I was honestly, if you can be, I was overprepared. It wasn't about showing off or anything. It was just about showing that I cared about the position. So one of Rory's main points was that he puts a lot of support around us with our medical center, with our trainers, tutors, et cetera, where he wants his coaches to be able to coach, focus on that, their program specifically in recruiting. So I created a custom recruiting presentation and said, hey, this is what I will be showing recruits within the next 72 hours if you give me the job.
Uh-huh.
So I went, and that was great for me just for my own learning about Goodland. So it was things to do in Goodland, our facilities, our style of play, player development structure, which of course is big in JUCO,
yep.
Mental health resources, how we're going to integrate with the community. It was about a 20-page slide deck. And within the first 5 minutes of my in-person, or I'm sorry, my Zoom interview with the president, VP, AD, and the men's head coach, I said, hey, do you mind if I take a minute to share about recruiting? And President Shears said that that was the first time in 9 years he's had any coach in any sport show him a presentation about their school.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
Well, wow. Look at you. You just blew away everybody else and just ran with it. So, coaching today is, let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about. But it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level. And you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level. It's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops. a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you got to know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about. Zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development. Personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it for 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from a pen and a napkin. What's the priority right now? We talked a little bit off camera here about you said something like I've got a lot more respect for the head coaches I work for over the last couple of years in the last week or so. What's the rush been like?
I'm diving right into recruiting. I need by August 17th need to have a full bench and some high character kids. So my priority right now is I'm looking for high character, fiercely competitive, and a deeply connected team in all aspects. So as far as the high character goes, like, we're going to do things the right way. We're going to be in the weight room. Coach Slava taught me this at Cornell. He said his one rule for his program is to be a great teammate. And so here are some examples. Would a great teammate take the weight room seriously? Are you going to clean up after yourself in the dining hall? Is your locker room going to be neat? Will you show up to class on time and be engaged and not sit in the back row with your hoodie up? Like, I think we do know that adversity reveals character. Mm-hmm. So we're going to embrace hard. Monty Williams once said that success is on the other side of hard. So I'm just looking for high character kids. We can teach, but it's hard to teach character.
Yeah.
The unmatched competitive piece. My dad wrestled for Iowa under Dan Gable. And one thing he always said was to prepare until you can't imagine that your competition is still preparing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that cost me some sleep and every once in a while an extra hug and kiss for my wife, because I love to work.
Yeah.
But I just love to prepare, and I don't. And then the last thing with that is I don't want to suck the joy out of the gym. I think it's really important for me to be even keeled, know where to pick my spots, and read kids. But we all need to coexist for a lot of times throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is just having genuine care for each other. I think Simon Sinek said that service to many leads to greatness. And I coach to serve kids and impact them as much as I can. So I'm going to spend a lot of time with you. And we're going to build, but it's that classic team acronym that together everyone achieves more.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put that on my wall anywhere, but I do believe it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for: high character, fiercely competitive, and we're going to be deeply connected.
What drew you to this job?
I told them in my interview, it's career development. I get the opportunity to be a head coach and to continue learning.
Uh-huh.
Those two are big for me. And it's also, we're in Western Kansas. I will not make it out to be what it's not. It's Western Kansas. And there's about 5,000 people in the town. But you also get to compete in the Jayhawk Conference with some dogs in Division I JUCO. So I believe that if an opportunity to show that if you can win in a place where there hasn't typically been a lot of winning, you're doing something right, and it's good for career development.
Mm-hmm. And you're looking for an AC. Yeah. So give the 30-second blurb of why it would be great to go to Goodland, Kansas to work for Jordan Klein.
That is fantastic.
Look at that. See, I get a little bit, I get a royalty off of the hiring and everything. That royalty comes like in the form of like a Fort Hays Tech t-shirt I can wear around Omaha. So, yeah.
It's already on its way.
I'll get you, or I'll have Showalter get you a Last of the Cowboys book then, or in exchange for that. How about that? Yeah. Yep. Got it.
You will have the opportunity to coach right away. You will be recruiting. We get to wear lots of hats as a small staff. That's what I learned in Division II and III. So the experience, the learning will be there. And then also know that I am very receptive to learning and being challenged. How you approach it and how you communicate with me is a different ballgame in and of itself. But I'm really looking for someone that is engaged with their players, with our players, that cares.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, if you work 8 hours a day or if you work 14 hours a day, I'm not on your butt about when you clocked in and clocked out. We just have it takes what it takes.
Yeah.
And there's a job to get done. And if you're more efficient, I'm not penalizing you for time. But we're going to be engaged with our teammates. They will know that we care about them. If they don't feel that every day, during warmups, we're just walking over to them and checking in and saying, how are classes going? How are you feeling being away from home? Can I help you with anything? It's not going to work. It'll work for 10 months and it won't work for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are big for me. Former players are good. GAs are really good. Just have some hunger. Because I've done it before. I did it for the last 2 years and 3 years in high school before. It's not an easy climb, but I can understand it through my own experience, and you will be, we don't know the trajectory that we're going on. So yeah. If there's trust in the relationship there, it'll be good.
Yeah. Let's talk a little hoops. I said, you got one X's and O's thing to talk about here. So the floor is yours, my friend. I'm on pins and needles. What's the topic of the day? What are we going to talk about?
Recruiting this summer. I've been at more tournaments this summer than I ever have before. So we are going to talk very quickly about spacing.
Okay.
I'm sure it's a belabored point amongst coaches, but spacing is not just a concept. I say that it's oxygen for offense. So specifically, I talk about pushing and pulling. If the ball is coming towards you, we need to push away from the ball to stretch the floor. Mm-hmm. And if the ball is being dribbled away from you, I need you to pull behind the ball and stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
So we say that inside, if you're inside the three-point line in transition, or if you get stuck on a cut and stop short, you're underwater. If you need to get air, that's like old Greg Popovich.
Yep.
So we'll say it in transition. I'll just be screaming, get air, get air, get air, get air. And then this reminds me of my grandma. She would just tell me to go fix my face and sit in the corner. And I need all players to know that that is not a punishment. It's not a track. You're not in timeout. The ball does not need you standing next to it. And I just think it's so important for players to learn proximity to the ball does not equal productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So pushing and pulling for me, having watched hundreds of summer ball games, if I could teach one thing to a team, not individuals on player development, but as a team, we're going to talk about pushing and pulling.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the challenges that you can have as a college coach and to a degree, and I think this might be, I've always been fascinated by this at the junior college level, because what your part of your pitch is at Fort Hays Tech is, you come here And let's say you're being recruited by NAIAs, but you want to be recruited by Division IIs or Division Ones. Come here for a year or two. We're going to do everything we can to get you to that level. But in a lot of kids' mind, and I'm not saying that's the only reason why kids go to junior college, but it's a factor for some kids. A lot of kids see it as, if I'm going to get that call from that D2 or that D1, I've got to put up X amount of shots. I've got to score X amount of points, which of course requires having the ball in your hands. But for the good of the Tigers, we've got to have spacing. We've got to move the ball. We've got to be selfless. We've got to cut and move. So what's the plan for teaching those unselfish concepts to players who, you know, like I said, a lot of them are looking to, you know, they've got one eye on this one, but it's natural to have one eye on what's my next stop, because you know there's going to be a next stop if they're going to get a 4-year degree. So, you know, how are you planning on teaching those spacing and unselfish concepts to kids in that situation?
I think it's really probably because of my finance background, but I look at data. And when I'm recruiting, when I was at a 4-year recruiting, I'm looking at data. Mm. So I have seen kids, we look at two things, effective field goal percentage, which we'll have, and points per shot. I stole that one from Clay Moser. Mm-hmm. He looks at points per shot in a box score. I've seen kids that average 15 plus points a game at Division I JUCOs, and I don't reach out to them because they shoot 19% from the 3-point line. And I watch film and 4 of their first 6 makes from the 3-point line are banks.
Yeah.
Like I want efficiency. And when I watch film, I want to see that, you know, the game.
Yeah.
I'm all about transparency. I can tell you that I recently did not offer a kid because, she was on the wing. There was a double gap in the opposite slot. And as they drove to the ball, she just cut to the elbow, blow up of 4 people, no spacing concept. Like, I can teach you that. And, you're now 20 years old. I need you to have a little better understanding of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think data-driven and making it not personal. Hey, these are the facts. It's coming from a third party called statistics.
And it's pretty black and white. Yeah.
You're right. I don't make the numbers up. But points per shot and effective field goal percentage will be big for me. And mm-hmm. I can just tell them again from experience, if you can make, like Ray Allen said it, but people that can make corner threes get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So go stand over there and make shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a big sell is at every level on every team, you have a role. And, you know, it's better for you to embrace your role here and average 10 points a game instead of trying to force it and to try and average 13 or 14 points a game. You're going to get better looks from the next level by being a great teammate here. That's part of the pitch.
That's yes. I think I would take that to success breeds success.
Yeah.
And it gives you the opportunity. So if we're 9-21 next year, you're going to be recruited based off of your highlight video, not because anyone saw you in the region tournament or at the national tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So we can also be successful as a team, and I guarantee you there will be plenty more eyes on us based on that. And you didn't choose to play golf or wrestle. You decided to sign up for a team sport. So we're going to play a team sport.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coach Klein, if folks want to know more about you, if they want to know more about your new program, less than a week old now, you know, how can they find out about it?
You can go to techtigers.com. My cell phone is 262-505-3176. I'm always happy to connect with people. Regardless, you don't need to add. You can ask me for things. You can talk hoops. All good. And then my ex is at Coach J Klein, KLEIN.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, hey, Coach, thanks for getting up early with me this Saturday morning here. You be at Snow Valley in July?
Yes, I'm planning to be at the girls' one. I can definitely make that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll see you there, my friend.
Okay, sounds good. I'm going to send you that shirt.
I tell you what, keep it, you know, save the postage. I know you're on a budget. Just throw it at me when we get to Waverly. How about that?
All right. Sounds good, sir. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Hold the line here just a second, Jordan. I want to thank Rafael Barlow talking some NBA draft. That was a lot of fun. Thanks for Coach Klein for coming on here as well. Again, we got a lot of good stuff here. We got Last of the Cowboys coming out on July the 1st. Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO coming out in the fall, which really excited about that. And we're just going to keep things moving here. We've got a great podcast for next week already put together, or it's going to be put together by the time you hear this one. And so we're just excited to keep things rolling. So for Coach Barlow, for Coach Klein, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.